Yes, this is Monday. It's July 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, prior to a secret appearance before a Senate committee, President Trump's son-in-law says he did meet with Russian officials but did not collude with them or any other foreign governments. The U.S. is dispatching a special representative on international negotiations to Israel, trying to ease tensions over the expansion of security measures at Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque. In the wake of the discovery of people who died in an overheated truck in Texas over the weekend, we explore human smuggling and why it's so difficult to control. It's all on today's International Edition. Jared Kushner, the son-in-law and close advisor of U.S. President Donald Trump, says he did not collude with any foreign governments or have any improper contacts. Kushner released an 11-page statement this morning before his closed-door meeting with the Senate Intelligence Committee and another planned session tomorrow in front of the House Intelligence Committee. Both congressional panels are examining Russia's meddling in last year's U.S. election. VOA's Cindy Sain is covering the story. She joins us from Capitol Hill. Cindy, this was a closed-door meeting, but what else did Mr. Kushner say in his public statement or his public paper that he issued early this morning?
Well, that's right, Ira, and I can tell you that there's been a lot of excitement and anticipation. Big throng of us reporters here in this Hart Senate office building today. Jared Kushner met with investigators, with staff members, not with senators themselves, but with staff members who are very well versed in the specifics of this Russia investigation for more than 2 hours. And is expected to have answered questions. He disclosed that he has had 4 meetings with Russians, 2 during the campaign and 2 afterwards. And I'm sure that he was asked a lot of questions about those meetings, 2 of them apparently with the outgoing Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak.
Well, this Kushner, for people who haven't been following the story as closely as we are almost forced to here in the United States, is he not the closest advisor to President Trump who has testified so far?
Yes, that's right, Ira. He is, he's been put in charge of everything from Middle East peace process to reforming law enforcement. He's one of the president's closest advisors, and of course his son-in-law. So this is getting very close to the presidency, having Jared Kushner here on Capitol Hill, the Senate Intelligence Committee, and on Tuesday he will speak again behind closed doors with members of the House Intelligence Committee.
Most people who testify before the committee, now we understand your explanation of this really was not the full committee with all the senators present. Kushner today was not sworn in. Any reason why that was the case, where it doesn't need to be, or what?
Well, Ira, that's a good question. I think it's because it was not public testimony. And some of the senators on the committee, we have Republican Senator Lankford saying, we have closed behind doors meetings all the time. We can discuss classified information that way. And I think it was part of the deal that Jared Kushner agreed to cooperate, to turn over information and documents and to answer questions. Upon leaving the Hill here, he said he answered all the questions that they had for him, so that it was then not televised, which, could have been very awkward for him and for the president.
Yeah, and also, from what I understand reading this morning, I mean, it would be illegal to lie to any section of the any presence of the committee anyway on Capitol Hill. Is that correct?
That's a good point, yes. Whether you're sworn in or not, it still is perjury if you lie, if you're giving testimony on Capitol Hill.
All right, so it was a big wait out, not much came about it except the paper that he released this morning, but we'll be following it, and I'm sure Cindy will as well. Cindy Sain from Capitol Hill with us here on International Edition. Thanks so much, Cindy.
My pleasure.
Well, Andrew Palshevsky joins us now. Are people talking about this, or isn't it making big waves on social media?
Well, I want to read to you 2 tweets that people have put out, and these kind of, I think, encapsulate the 2 sides of things. One says, Former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was fired for less. So these are the people saying that Kushner has clearly broken the law. He's lied on his security forms. He should be fired, or possibly worse, face legal repercussions. And then you have the other side that say, hey, this is basically a clerical error. He admitted that he had these meetings. He failed to put them down, forgot to put them down on this form, failed to disclose that activity. And so those people are trying to downplay this, saying, well, it's really not that big a deal. He's coming clean. He's addressing the issues where he made mistakes. So let's move on from that. And that's really the two sides that we're seeing on social media, the people who are defending Kushner and defending the Trump administration, and people who are calling for him to be punished and face ramifications. And surprising no one, those camps are pretty well split along party lines.
You really?
I know.
Is that
shocking.
So? Yes.
Shocking as it may be to think that A, social media is politically divided, and B, that Republicans are defending Trump and Democrats are going against him. But that is the case on social media.
Well, guess who took to Twitter again this morning? The president did. Donald Trump taking a new swipe at his attorney general, Jeff Sessions, referring to him in a tweet as beleaguered and wondering why Sessions isn't digging into Hillary Clinton's alleged contacts with Russia. Basically nothing new, right?
Right. And that's actually a line that we see again and again as well with Kushner, with Sessions, with really just about everybody. Today with Kushner, lots of people saying, well, Hillary Clinton lied about her emails. She did so much worse than Jared Kushner could have done. So people still using Hillary Clinton as that person to target on the Republican side. But you bring up Jeff Sessions, and I want to talk about that as well, because he's trending on social media after that beleaguered comment. And there's another name that's trending, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani. And that's because the rumors swirling around right now are that Donald Trump is considering replacing his current Attorney General Jeff Sessions with Rudy Giuliani as the new Attorney General. So lots of intrigue about that. Giuliani was one of the highest profile surrogates for the Trump campaign who did not get a job in the administration. So lots of people said, well, it would make sense for him to be the pick now. It would be kind of surprising to get rid of the Attorney General after only about 6 months in office. That would be a pretty big surprise. But then they have people dissecting the fears over Giuliani being more extreme than Sessions, or would he be a great attorney general? People citing him as America's mayor because he was mayor during the September 11th terrorism attacks and very much beloved among many Republicans. So a lot of back and forth, even among those rumors that are going around about Giuliani. But the nice comment, or the interesting comment that people are starting to take note of, is that between Anthony Scaramucci as comms director and potentially Giuliani as attorney general, Trump seems to be in a New York state of mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he apparently has been for all of his life. Right?
Well, he's lived, born and bred and lived there his whole life, except I guess when he's been down in Florida. But these two very strong New York figures could be playing some very important roles in the Trump administration. One of them, Scaramucci, already is. And Giuliani could be soon as well. And social media is monitoring that as it develops.
Well, if you've been down in Southern Florida, you know it's full of transplanted New Yorkers anyway.
Yes, I know a lot of people from when I grew up, parents of friends and grandparents have moved down there. So that's very true.
So the whole situation can be summed up this way, I do believe. As has been the case for the past number of years, every time we have a momentous day of something happening in the Trump administration, it leaves us with more questions than answers.
Yes, and those questions end up swirling on social media, many of them going unanswered, but the speculation often takes the form of the answers. Instead of getting answers on things, we just get more rumors and more speculation.
Andrew Palcheski looking at social media here on International Edition. Among the top stories of the world, President Trump's son-in-law testifies before a Senate committee investigating possible Russian election interference. A Taliban suicide car bombing has killed at least 35 people and injured dozens more in the Afghan capital of Kabul. Officials in Pakistan say a suspected suicide bomb in the eastern city of Lahore has killed at least 26 people. President Trump telling Republican lawmakers they have a last chance to do the right thing and overhaul the country's health care law. A truck driver suspected in a smuggling operation that left 10 people dead has been charged in Texas with illegally transporting immigrants, according to a court document released today. Expanded coverage at voanews.com on all of our mobile apps. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. A team of anthropologists exploring a cave system in South Africa has found the fossilized remains of a new, modern human ancestor. The scientists say it's possible that the new hominin species may have even lived along with the earliest modern humans and probably other hominin species over 200,000 years ago. The newfound relative species is called Homo naledi. Anthropologist and research team leader John Hawks from the University of Wisconsin says that the discovery included the remains of three juvenile and adults and includes a complete skull. Finding the gathering of remains leads Hawks to think that the Homo naledi used large remote places to store its dead. This behavior, he says, is something that suggests great intelligence and possibly the first stirrings of culture. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. The United States is dispatching President Trump's special representative on international negotiations, Jason Greenblatt, to Israel to try to ease tensions over the expansion of security measures at Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque. Israel has installed metal detectors at the entrances to the mosque after two Israeli policemen were shot and killed nearby on July 14th. Randolph-Macon College analyst Michael Fishbach told VOA's Victor Beatty Muslims view the heightened security measures as violating the delicate and long-standing status quo.
The worst-case scenario is that we could be heading toward a third Palestinian intifada, and that's something that disturbs a lot of people on various sides because it inevitably would lead to bloodshed on both sides.
Isn't Israel justified following the killing of those two policemen to try to ban weapons from entering this temple complex?
Well, the Israeli government has said that it is routine for houses of worship around the world to have metal detectors. Of course, everything in the Israel-Palestinian context depends on the history. Literally, as far back as the Ottomans, there have been what are called status quo laws that have dealt with how different religious sects and different nationalities deal with, share, use certain houses of worship in what is today Israel and the West Bank and Gaza. And certainly in the case of this particular sacred area, Palestinians claim that putting any kind of bar or hindrance upon worshipers represents a change in the status quo. Israel has said, well, of course, this is a security measure following up on the attack that killed two Israeli border police. And I think many Americans forget that East Jerusalem is occupied territory under international law.
UN Security Council considers this an urgent matter enough to meet on Monday to seek ways to calm the situation.
You know, there is issues related to the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. There are relations between Israel and Jordan, Jordan having a historic and indeed a legal role in the holy places, the Islamic holy places there for the United States. This is of concern because so much else is going on in the Middle East, and there is a trickle-over effect that this could trigger into something much wider. So I can well see why the UN Security Council wants to meet to discuss this.
Do you see any way out of this for both sides?
The Israeli press has reported that the Israeli government is particularly concerned, although the army and the Internal Security Service had recommended several days ago that these metal detectors be removed. However, in light of what's happened, the Netanyahu government is anxious not to appear that it is caving in to the Palestinian street and removing these.
Meanwhile, the Israeli Foreign Ministry said Monday two Jordanians were killed inside its embassy complex in Amman late Sunday by an Israeli guard who said one of the workmen, a teenager, lunged at him with a screwdriver. We continue on International Edition. We told you about the story of Jared Kushner testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee behind closed doors. Well, he made his way from Capitol Hill back to the White House, came out in front of the White House and made a statement.
I did not collude with Russia, nor do I know of anyone else in the campaign who did so. I had no improper contacts. I have not relied on Russian funds for my businesses. And I have been fully transparent in providing all requested information.
That is the sum and substance of what Jared Kushner had to say standing outside of the White House after his testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee. This is VOA.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Police in Texas say they found eight people dead early Sunday in the back of a sweltering tractor trailer in a Walmart parking lot. A ninth victim died in a hospital just hours later. Surveillance footage recorded vehicles pulling up to the truck Saturday night, taking a few people at a time from the trailer and then closing the truck and driving away. The truck's human cargo was discovered after someone from the trailer asked a Walmart employee for water. That led to a police check and the discovery of about 30 survivors, including two school-age children, along with those who died, all adult men. Authorities at a hospital where the survivors were taken said 20 people were in critical condition. Calling the case a horrific tragedy, the police chief at San Antonio, William McManus, said we're looking at a human trafficking crime this evening. We welcome to International Edition Nestor Rodriguez. He is at the University of Texas in Austin. Dr. Rodriguez's research focuses on Guatemalan migration, U.S. deportations to Mexico and Central America, unauthorized migration of unaccompanied minors, evolving relations between Latinos and African Americans and Asian Americans. So, Dr. Rodriguez, you seem to be a perfect fit, hopefully, to answer these questions. This obviously is a terrible story about those killed in the trailer in San Antonio. How common is this type of human trafficking, or do you want to call it human smuggling?
Well, it doesn't happen every day, but it does happen every few years. And, you know, since, let's say, the year 2000, there's been several of these smuggling deaths as people are being smuggled in from the southern border into the interior of the state. It's almost a common problem.
How much business is there? How many people want to come into the United States? Why they want to come into the United States? Mm-hmm. And what's being done to stop them?
The number has actually dropped dramatically. Mexicans were the big numbers of people coming in without visas. And since the year 2000, that number has dropped by almost 80%. But other migrants are coming now in larger numbers, and those are the ones from Central America. Most come primarily for two reasons. One is to look for work. There still are many industries that hire migrant workers, even without visas. These are labor-intensive industries of construction, landscaping, agriculture. Another reason that the migrants come is to get back to their families.
Has the situation changed at all since Donald Trump has taken over the Oval Office in Washington and promised to do something about immigration, especially from Mexico?
It's changed some in that there's obviously a change in attitude. Border Patrol, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement have become more aggressive in implementing apprehensions of unauthorized migrants. But, I mean, they're dealing with a historical phenomenon of, you know, labor migration across the border that has been going on for over 100 years. So it'll take some time, I think, for enforcement to be more effective. And it's not clear also that the solution is more border enforcement, but that perhaps we also need new immigration policy that will allow in those migrants that are actually needed to work in construction, landscaping, agriculture, so they don't have to risk their lives coming in dangerous trucks where they die as they suffocate, you know, in those trucks.
What kind of conditions are these people fleeing in Mexico and through Central America that can motivate them to put up with the possibility of death and or capture?
Right. There are two primary conditions that seem to propel migrants towards the U.S. or also to Mexico. Many Central Americans settle in Mexico, and those are poverty, industries that pay very little, and violence. We find that in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, there are organized gangs that are invading neighborhoods and taking control of streets and forcing people to flee, including women who are fleeing with young children. So poverty and violence are two principal motivations for migration.
Dr. Nestor Rodriguez is a professor of sociology at the University of Texas in Austin, Texas. Dr. Rodriguez, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
We should tell you now that the death toll of the number of people who died or died right after being taken from that tractor trailer in San Antonio, Texas, is now standing at 10, as at least one person has died at the hospital. And the truck driver has been brought up to a federal court where he has been charged with various charges dealing with what has taken place in that that incident over the weekend. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us at Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to Director Patrice Martin. Thanks to our engineer, the inimitable Daniel Crafton. I'm Ira Mellon in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The liberation of Mosul is a critical milestone in the global fight against ISIS. This victory, and every significant victory of the campaign, was achieved with the support of the 73-member nation global coalition to defeat ISIS and with Iraqi security forces. But the battle in Iraq is far from over, said Special Presidential Envoy for the Global Coalition to Counter ISIS, Brett McGurk.
Iraqi forces, with our support, will soon move to liberate remaining territories controlled by ISIS, including Talafer, Hawija, and Al-Qaim. We will support them in the military campaign and in what comes next at the humanitarian, stabilization, and governance levels.
This plan was a success in Mosul, said Mr. McGurk. On the political level, we worked to ensure full cooperation between Iraqi security forces and the Peshmerga, a level of cooperation we later saw on the ground. On the humanitarian level, we planned with the United Nations and the government of Iraq for nearly 1 million displaced people from Mosul. Every single one of them, said Mr. McGurk, received assistance and aid. At the stabilization level, we planned to meet immediate needs, including police force, clearing landmines left by ISIS, restoring electricity, water, sewage, rubble removal, and work programs. Syria will be far more complicated because we do not have a government to work with there. Nonetheless, we will work with local populations from the areas freed of ISIS control to restore their communities and return the displaced to their homes. It'll take a global network to defeat the ISIS network over the long term, said Mr. McGurk. There is no question, however, that 3 years into this global effort, we stand united. 73 members from around the globe in common purpose, the destruction of ISIS and the protection of our own citizens and homelands through our joint cooperation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.